he said, and moved away, retreating several yards down the bridge and giving us plenty of room. After a moment, Yumiko followed. I faced Onino Mikoto over the center of the river, the moon shining down on us both, lighting the bridge. A cold breeze hissed across the planks from the water, ruffling my clothes and tossing his long hair. "Does your sword have a name, Kage-san?" Onino Mikoto asked.
"Why?"
he shrugged.
"I'm a scholar of the blade. I have studied the history of Iwagoto's swordsmanship, its finest warriors and weaponsmiths, and through the years, the names of a few special blades have appeared time and time again. The Emperor's Sword, Dawn's Glory. The paired blades of the famed duelist Mizu Sasaki. If your sword does have a name, I would like very much to hear it. It will be a great honor to cross blades with a weapon from the history scrolls."
"There is no honor in this sword's name."
Onino Mikoto's head tilted, as if he was seeing me for the first time.
"You are of the Shadow Clan," he said slowly. "There are but two swords of note that originated within the Kage. Sasori, the blade of the Shadow Clan Daimyo, and the cursed sword that brought destruction to the land and nearly wiped the Kage from existence."
I felt a smile creep, unbidden, across my face as I heard myself speaking words that weren't entirely my own.
"A true oni would know better than to cross blades with Kamigoroshi."
"Then it is true,"
Onino Mikoto whispered, sounding faintly in awe.
"You possess the God Slayer, the cursed sword of the Kage."
I took a breath, pushing the other presence down and reclaiming my voice.
"You can turn back," I told him softly, as Hakaimono snarled at me, annoyed. "Kamigoroshi doesn't care what soul it devours, be it human or demon. There is still time to bow out. You said so yourself. It is no dishonor to acknowledge a superior opponent."
"Kage-san!"
Onino Mikoto stepped forward. He was shaking, but it wasn't in fear, I realized, but excitement.
"This is the fight I have searched for my whole life. Long I have waited for a worthy opponent, one who would push me beyond the limit of my skills. How many can say they have dueled a legend? How many can say they have crossed blades with the sword that almost single-handedly destroyed one of the great clans? No, Kage-san, I will not relinquish this battle."
He raised his own weapon in a two-handed grip, the curved sword glittering between us like a shaft of moonlight.
"I am Onino Mikoto, the undefeated blade of the Taiyo, and it will be an honor to fight you."
I hesitated a moment more, then slowly drew Kamigoroshi. It howled eagerly as it was unsheathed, baleful purple light spilling over the planks. We faced each other on the bridge, unmoving, the wind tugging at our hair and clothes. I stood motionless, Kamigoroshi loose at my side, while Onino Mikoto did the same, his blade held upright in two hands. Time seemed to slow, each of us sizing up our opponent, gauging strengths and weaknesses, waiting for that moment we would both explode into battle.
"Not yet,"
I thought, as Onino Mikoto shifted his stance just slightly, drawing one foot behind the other. I tightened my grip on Kamigoroshi, feeling my muscles tense and Hakaimono's impatience flare, eager for blood.
"He's going to come in fast. Be ready."
With a crash and a splintering of boards, a huge serpentine creature burst out from under the bridge, rising 15 feet into the air between us. Pale light gleamed off a hardened carapace, and dozens of segmented yellow legs skittered over the planks as the creature crawled onto the bridge. A bulbous crimson head swung around to face me, green ichor dripping from two sickle-like mandibles, as the Omukade, a giant, man-eating centipede, reared up with a piercing hiss and lunged.
24. The Great Omukade. My stomach seemed to drop to my toes. A monstrous centipede loomed into the air, towering over Tatsumi and Oni no Mikoto, making them look like insects themselves. Its segmented carapace was jet black, its head bright crimson, and two lethal mandibles opened like a pair of sickles as it sped toward Tatsumi. The warrior dodged, springing aside, and brought Kamigoroshi across the centipede's back in a flash of purple light. But the blade screeched off the armor-like chitin, leaving a gaping scar in the carapace, but unable to pierce through.
Kuso!
Okame scrambled backward as the monster spun on Tatsumi, dozens of legs clacking over the planks, and lunged again. Once more, the demon slayer leaped aside, and the pincers sank into the railing behind him, slicing clean through the wood like it was rice paper. Tatsumi cut at the huge yokai, this time aiming for the bright yellow legs. With a spurt of green ichor, three severed appendages clattered to the bridge, twitching and thrashing about, but the omukade writhed around to follow him, not slowed in the least. An arrow bounced off the shiny carapace, then another, and a third.
Damn it!
Okame growled, firing a fourth arrow at the monster's head. It skidded off the top of its skull, and the centipede didn't even look up.
Kuso!
The ronin spat, reaching back for another arrow.
Tough, ugly bastard! Every spot is armored! At this rate, it'll eat Kage-san and then come after us!
Oni no Mikoto suddenly appeared, leaping over the centipede's long, writhing body and raising his sword over his head. The omukade, still facing off with Tatsumi, didn't notice the masked swordsman until the demon prince sliced down with his blade. Like Kamigoroshi, it screeched off the monster's thick carapace, and the centipede whirled on him with a hiss. Every spot is armored.
Okame!
I gasped, turning to the ronin, who was fitting another arrow to his bow.
The eyes! The eyes aren't protected! Aim for the eyes!
What?
Okame lowered his bow and gaped at me, then the centipede. The huge yokai thrashed about in the center of the bridge, snapping at Tatsumi and Oni no Mikoto as they desperately tried to avoid getting caught between its huge pincers. Tatsumi lashed out with Kamigoroshi as the centipede's head snaked down and the monster recoiled, furiously gnashing its jaws.
Damn it, it's moving around too much,
Okame growled, sighting down his bow at the huge yokai.
And its eyeball is the size of a persimmon, so it's really hard to get a shot. If the bastard would stop moving around, I just need it to be still for a second.
I swallowed hard. Keep aiming, I said, stepping forward. I'll get it to stop. Walking to the edge of the bridge, I watched the battle raging in the center, Tatsumi and Oni no Mikoto trying to put a dent in the centipede's armor, to little effect. The centipede had lost several more legs, which lay scattered over the planks, twitching weakly, but it didn't seem hampered by the loss of its limbs. Heart pounding, I put a thumb and forefinger into my mouth, and did what always annoyed Denga-san. A long, piercing whistle echoed over the bridge. The omukade froze at the sound and glanced up. For just a moment, its cold, beady gaze met mine, just before an arrow flew overhead and struck the very center of one bulbous black eye. The yokai wailed. Its huge body thrashed wildly, smashing into posts and railings, snapping beams and splintering wood. Tatsumi and Oni no Mikoto quickly dove aside, but the demon prince was struck by a writhing coil that knocked him to the edge of the bridge and sent him over. I saw his lean form plummet toward the river, long pale hair streaming behind him, before he struck the water and vanished below the surface. And then I looked back at the bridge and saw the omukade glaring at me with its one good eye, mandibles trembling with rage. Well, that certainly got its attention. I turned and ran as the monster charged with a shriek, multiple legs skittering over the bridge. I didn't dare look back, but the furious chitter of snapping centipede jaws told me it was closing rapidly.
Tree, Tree, I need a tree. Spotting a twisted pine at the edge of the riverbank, I changed direction and darted toward it, snatching a leaf from the ground as I did. As I neared the tree, I whispered a few words of fox magic and released the leaf just before I ducked behind the trunk. And I hoped none of the others would see the second Yumeko appear, cringing at the base of the pine. On the other side of the trunk, I held my breath, praying the Omukade wouldn't see through the illusion. I needn't have worried, because with a screech that made my ears ring, the centipede crashed headfirst into the trunk. I felt the solid thunk of its mandibles slicing through the fake Yumeko, sinking deep into the wood and making the tree rattle. As the centipede thrashed, trying to dislodge itself, I sprang to the first overhanging branch, pulled myself up, and instantly reached for another. Years of climbing the old maple tree in the temple gardens made it easy to shimmy up the trunk, and fear of the monster below made me quick. I was halfway up the tree when the Omukade tore itself loose with a splintering of tree bark. Looking down, I met its flat, soulless gaze as it peered up the pine and gave a hiss of fury. Gnashing its pinchers, it began to climb, dozens of bright yellow legs moving it up the trunk with frightening speed. I climbed higher, hearing the hissing and scraping of the yokai as it pursued. As the branches became smaller and narrower, the centipede began to slow. But its body was so long, it was able to reach even the tallest limbs without much effort, though the tree itself began to sway and groan under the monster's weight. Finally, there was nowhere else to run. I had reached the top of the tree, and the centipede was still coming. Pulling my tanto, I climbed as far away as I could, watching the bulbous crimson skull push through the branches below my feet. Mandibles scraping together, it slithered up the trunk toward me. The pine creaked and groaned, and the trunk bent and swayed dangerously, but it held. As it drew closer and I could see every detail on its hideous, segmented body, I noticed something. The top half of the huge creature was covered in that shiny black carapace that deflected arrows and sword strikes, but the underside, between the dozens of skittering legs, looked softer, almost fleshy. Certainly not the impenetrable armor of its top half. But how to get beneath it was the question. Raising my tanto with one hand, I started gathering my magic with the other, hoping that a desperate blast of foxfire to its face would distract or startle it long enough for me to do something. Yumeko! The familiar voice rang out below me, and close. I spared a glance down and saw Tatsumi on a lower branch, Kamigoroshi engulfed in purple flames, casting the demon slayer in an eerie light. His eyes seemed to glow crimson as he extended his other hand in my direction. "Jump," he ordered, making my stomach drop. "Now." I swallowed. "It's an awfully long ways down, Tatsumi."
"I'll catch you," he replied. "I promise. Hurry."
Well, between getting eaten by a centipede and falling to my death, I suppose I'd take the latter. As the Omukade lunged with a hiss, I gathered myself and leaped away from the trunk, a shriek lodging somewhere in my throat as I plummeted downward. I barely had time to panic when something caught me around the waist, halting my downward plunge. Tatsumi pulled me onto the branch and set me on my feet, still holding Kamigoroshi in his other hand. I was shocked at how strong he was, able to catch a falling body, one-armed, from a narrow, uneven ledge without losing his balance. As I looked into his face, a shiver raced up my spine. His eyes were glowing, a subtle, crimson light shining in their depths, looking entirely inhuman.
"Are you hurt?"
he asked, and his voice sounded a little different, too. Lower, somehow darker, but strained, as if he was fighting something. "The underside isn't protected," I told him, seeing his eyes narrow in confusion. "The carapace, the armor, it doesn't have anything on its belly. You have to strike from beneath." His eyes widened, and he nodded.
Above us, the Omukade swung its head and body toward our branch, hissing and gnashing its jaws. Still holding me around the waist, Tatsumi abruptly dropped from the limb, falling to a branch underneath. I bit back a yelp, resisting the urge to clutch at his howry jacket as he set me on my feet, gazing up at the long body of the Omukade twisting through the limbs overhead. The head peered balefully down at us, hissed, and started sliding through the branches in pursuit. "Can you lure it away?" Tatsumi asked in a low voice. "Get it to chase you?" I realized what he was getting at and gave a shaky nod. "I don't think that will be much of a problem," I gasped, as overhead the Omukade snaked through the branches after us, gnashing its jaws. Tatsumi nodded. "Go," he ordered, and we fled, scurrying down the trunk, dropping to lower branches while trying to outpace the huge yokai slithering through the limbs like a serpent. About halfway down the tree, I noticed that Tatsumi had disappeared, or I could no longer see him through the leaves and branches. Something buzzed past my face, startling me, just as an arrow clinked off the centipede's hide. Hissing angrily, it halted, glaring around for the sudden attacker, perhaps remembering the arrow it took to the face. "Okame, wait!" I called, glancing down at the ronin. He stood under the tree with a grim look on his face, bow raised and pointed at the centipede. At my words, he paused and lowered his weapon, but in that moment of distraction, my fingers missed a branch, and I fell, dropping several feet. Pulse spiking, I lashed out wildly and felt my palm smack into another limb, halting my fall. I heard Okame's cry of alarm as I dangled, my feet swinging over empty space, and I grabbed desperately for the branch with my other hand. Something warm dripped onto the back of my knuckles. Gulping, I looked up to see a pair of shiny black pincers a few feet away, opening wide to snick off my head. At the same time, a blur of darkness streaked overhead as Tatsumi ran full tilt along a branch and sliced Kamigoroshi through the exposed belly of the Omukade. The Omukade screamed, rearing up as it split in two with a spray of green and yellow ichor. Its top half, now separated from the rest of its body, slid from the branches of the tree and collapsed to the ground on its back, legs curling frantically as it struggled to right itself. "The head, Okame!" I shouted over the mad hissing of the huge yokai as it thrashed and writhed, too tough to die even now. "Cut off the head! That should kill it for good!" Understanding dawned in the ronin's eyes, and he turned to the downed monster. But before he could react, Oni no Mikoto strode up to the struggling yokai, raised his sword, and brought it slashing down beneath the monster's still gnashing jaws. The bulbous crimson head rolled back, the spasming legs stilled, and the lethal jaws finally stopped moving as the great yokai admitted defeat at last. I breathed a sigh of relief, then tried pulling myself up the branch as my hands were starting to slip and surviving an attack by a great Omukade, only to fall from a tree and break my neck seemed like very bad luck. The branch shook, and a pair of tabi boots appeared next to my fingers. I looked up to see Tatsumi standing over me, Kamigoroshi held loosely at his side. His expression was chilling, a faint, curious smile gracing his lips, as if this situation amused him and he was contemplating what to do next. "Tatsumi?" I panted as he continued to stand there, watching me. What are you doing? Help me!" For a moment, he continued to stand there, regarding me in that way that made my skin crawl. Kamigoroshi flickered and pulsed, and in the eerie light, Tatsumi's eyes glowed red, his pupils slitted like a cat's. Then one of my hands slipped, and I yelped as I lost my hold on the branch. Strong fingers closed around my wrist in a grip of steel, lifting me up and pulling me back onto the limb. Gasping, I clutched the black haori in front of me, my heart racing in my ears as I waited for my arms to stop shaking and my pulse to return to normal.
Yumeko?
Tatsumi's voice was strained again, but sounded normal this time. He had gone very stiff, his arms held rigid at his side, his heartbeat racing under my palm. I suddenly realized we were pressed very close, our chests nearly touching, our faces a few inches apart. The narrow end of the scroll was pressing painfully into my ribs.
Gomen!
Face burning, I released him and stepped away, shifting my weight to balance on the narrow branch. He relaxed, but continued to watch me, his expression grim, his eyes back to normal. And even through the embarrassment, I felt a tiny flame of relief. There was no hint of the scary, red-eyed Tatsumi I thought I'd seen a few seconds ago. Maybe it hadn't been real. Maybe in the eerie light coming from Kamigoroshi, I had imagined it after all.
Oi! Called a voice from below. Yumeko-chan! Kage-san! Are you two all right?
Hai, Okame! I called back. We're fine. We'll be right down.
A few minutes later, we had all gathered at the base of the tree, the massive corpse of the Omukade looming above us, both on the ground and still dangling from the branches. I wondered what people passing by would think if they looked up and saw two-thirds of a giant centipede curled around the limbs of the tree.
That, Okame said as Tatsumi and I walked up, was disgusting. Look at that thing. I don't care how ancient and special it was, there is no logical reason bugs should ever get that big.
It must be ancient, I said, staring at the monstrous corpse. But why did it come after us? It's like it knew exactly where we were.
It matters not.
The demon prince turned to Tatsumi. The monster is dead, he announced, as if being attacked by and killing a giant centipede was commonplace, something he did every evening before tea.
We are victorious, and the night is still young. Now that there are no more interruptions, shall we continue our duel, Kage-san?
25. Proposal for a Demon Prince.
Nani?
Yumeko stared at him.
Now?
She waved an arm at the giant corpse, leaking greenish fluid into the trampled grass.
We barely survived being eaten by a giant centipede. Is this really the time to keep fighting?
The duel was issued and accepted, Oni no Mikoto said in a reasonable voice. Interruptions aside, honor demands that we continue until a clear victor is determined. Kage-san? He bowed his head at me. Shall we return to the bridge? I am ready. I nodded wearily. If this was the only way to cross, then I would have to cut him down. I didn't necessarily want to. He had proven himself in the fight with the Omukade and refused to flee when it would have been the wiser choice. And from the glimpses I'd caught of his fighting, he was extremely skilled and fast, perhaps the best swordsman I had seen. He was going to be a deadly opponent, indeed. But he wasn't going to let me go, and I still had a mission to complete. If he wanted this duel, then I would give him an honorable death.
Wait!
Yumeko stepped forward as we started toward the bridge. Oni no
Mikoto, stop!
Peasant girl! Oni no Mikoto turned, and his voice, though polite, was chilly.
You travel with Kage-san, so I assume you are either his servant or someone under his protection. But servants do not give orders to samurai. Just a courteous warning, for the next warrior you encounter might take real offense.
Yumeko blinked, but didn't cower or back down.
Sumimasen, she told Oni no Mikoto. Was I supposed to bow? I was supposed to bow, wasn't I?
The ronin snickered. Actually, I think he expected you to prostrate yourself at his feet and grovel. That's usually what happens when peasants encounter samurai. I'm sorry, Yumiko continued. I meant no offense. I grew up in a temple and never had to address samurai before. Besides Tatsumi-san, and he doesn't seem to care.
I raised an eyebrow at that, but no one was looking at me.
I'm not very good at protocol, Yumiko went on. But I truly do not wish to offend. Should I fling myself on the ground now, Oni-sama?
No,
Onino Mikoto sighed. Just, what is it you want, girl? If Oni-sama would humor me for a moment, Yumeko continued, and look at the Omukade's right eye. What do you see?
The demon prince glanced at the yokai. The Omukade's head lay there, its jaws open in a last furious snarl, a few of its legs still twitching in death.
An arrow?
Onino Mikoto said, gazing at the ruined eye, where the shaft was easily visible in the moonlight.
He paused, putting the pieces together, and drew in a slow breath.
Then,
he glanced at Okame.
Then you are the one who shot the monster,
he said, as if just coming to the realization.
On the bridge when it first attacked, Kage-san and I could do nothing against it. Not one of our blows could get through, but,
he looked at the eye again,
something drew it away. That was you?
The ronin shrugged. I may have hit the thing, he replied and nodded at the girl, but Yumiko-chan got its attention and told me where to shoot. You want to thank someone for not ending up as centipede food? Thank her.
I see.
Onino Mikoto turned to face Yumiko again.
Then, it appears I owe you a debt of gratitude,
he said, and though his posture was stiff, his voice remained polite.
That's what you want, isn't it, girl? The boon of a samurai. Very well,
he straightened.
I will grant this one favor. Though understand this, I will not abandon my duel with Kage-san.
His gaze slid to me.
This is a battle I have waited for since I picked up my sword, and I will not miss it. You may ask me anything but that.
Very well, Oni-sama, Yumeko stated.
If you can't agree not to fight, then grant me this instead. Postpone the duel.
The demon prince seemed taken aback.
Postpone?
Yes, she confirmed.
I realize this is important to you, but I have an important mission to complete, and Tatsumi has already promised to accompany me until it is done. He is my escort to the capital, and I cannot allow him to die before I finish my task. You cannot allow?
Onino Mikoto blinked at her behind his mask, looking confused, then stunned. Unexpectedly, he sank into a low bow at the waist.
Forgive me, my lady, he said earnestly. I was unaware of your station. I mistook you for a simple peasant, but if Kage-san is your Yojimbo, I have made a grave mistake. I humbly beg your pardon for my error in judgment.
I frowned, vaguely annoyed at the assumption. I was no one's bodyguard. No one, save the Kage, commanded me. Though I wasn't going to correct the swordsman's conclusion. If he thought Yumeko was a lady and I was her Yojimbo, protecting her on the roads, then so be it. It might save us questions later.
Yes, you should feel ashamed,
the ronin broke in, pointing at the girl.
Obviously, a simple peasant could not be under the protection of the infamous Kage Demon Slayer, because peasants cannot have missions or goals or anything meaningful in their lives except serving samurai. Surely, she must be a shrine maiden or wandering onmyoji. That is the only explanation for this travesty. Isn't that so, Oni-san?
Had it been anyone else, the explanation would have made sense. Yumeko had grown up in a temple and spoke about her master Isao all the time. Monks, shrine maidens, and onmyoji held a different position in Iwagoto. They weren't part of the warrior caste and technically were considered peasants, but they were respected for their wisdom and enlightenment and were recognized as teachers, masters of their art, or spiritual advisors.
Onmyoji, especially, were revered among samurai and peasants alike. They were diviners, exorcists, fortune tellers, and specialists of the spirit world, and they were highly sought after for their talents. Because many Onmyoji traveled the land, and because they typically dealt with all manner of ghosts, yokai, and restless spirits, my path had crossed with theirs on more than one occasion. It was unlikely, but not impossible, to think Yumeko could be a traveling Onmyoji and had requested the aid of the Shadow Clan's Demon Slayer to act as her bodyguard. But I had been traveling with the irreverent Ronin long enough to recognize his veiled sarcasm and disdain for the warrior caste, and knew he was misleading the other without telling an outright lie.
"But Okame-san," Yumeko began. "I'm not..."
"Besides," the Ronin continued loudly, "is this really the time to keep fighting? You fell into the river, and Kage-san looks spent. If this is truly the duel you've been waiting for your whole life, do you really want to proceed now, when neither of you are at your best?"
"Hmm," the demon prince crossed his arms. "You make an excellent point," he admitted, his tone begrudging. "If we fight now, how will I know if it was skill that won the battle, and not blind luck or misfortune? If we are to duel, we must both be prepared and leave nothing to chance." "Very well," he gave a decisive nod and turned to Yumeko. "My lady," he said, "please allow me to accompany you and your escorts to the capital and wherever your travels take you afterward." Startled, I narrowed my eyes as Yumeko straightened. Apparently, she had not expected this either.
"Why?"
she asked.
"I know my way around King Heigen-toshi," Onino Mikoto continued. "I have lived there for many years, and my name carries much weight. I would be happy to offer assistance while you are conducting your business in the capital."
"We don't need assistance," I told him. "Thank you, but we can get by on our own."
"Forgive me, Kage-san,"
Onino Mikoto sounded amused as he glanced at me.
"But we were just attacked by a giant centipede monster. I may not know much about demons, but I have to assume that was not a random assault. The life of a demon slayer must be a dangerous one,"
Onino Mikoto went on as unease flickered within me. Here was yet another who knew entirely too much about the Shadow Clan and Kamigoroshi. Another I might have to kill, should the clan order it.
"Especially if he is acting as a bodyguard to an Onmyoji. The road ahead could be full of peril and evil creatures. Protecting both your charge and yourself will prove challenging if demons continue to target you."
He glanced at the tree and the giant centipede still coiled around the branches.
"I cannot have you dying before we complete our duel," Onino Mikoto went on. "That would be a dishonor to us both. Therefore, I will come with you and offer whatever assistance I can. Once your task is complete and Yumeko-san has no further need of your protection, we can continue what we started."
The Ronin threw back his head and laughed.
"I love the way samurai think," he announced, grinning. "So you're coming with us to make sure Kage-san stays alive so you can kill him later."
He snickered and shook his head.
"Man, I can't wait to see where this goes."
"I didn't know Onisama was so well known in the capital," Yumeko said, as the demon prince politely and deliberately ignored the Ronin. "Do people find the mask frightening?" "Ah, of course," Onino Mikoto said. "Forgive my rudeness. I haven't even properly introduced myself."
He reached up and pulled the Oni mask away, revealing a smooth, beardless face only a few years older than me. Small details instantly stood out. High cheekbones, a slightly pointed chin, and the pale, elegant look that marked him as a noble of the court. He had narrow, almost effeminate features, and had underlined his already sharp eyes in black. Not the most makeup I'd seen on a noble, even a male one, but it was impossible to mistake him for anything else.
"I am Taiyo Daisuke,"
the former Onino Mikoto announced with a formal bow to Yumeko.
It is a pleasure to meet you, Yumeko-san. Thank you again for the honor of accompanying you on your mission. As a traveling onmyoji, you must see a lot.
Taiyo, echoed the ronin, sounding incredulous. You're part of the imperial family?
The fourth son of one of the emperor's many cousins, Taiyo Daisuke replied with a rather wry smile. Thankfully, two of my brothers married well and hold important positions within the court, and the third is an imperial magistrate, so I don't have to worry about meeting my family's expectations. The ronin smirked.
That's a very unsamurai-like attitude, Taiyo-san. Won't you have to commit seppuku for having such a dishonorable thought?
My clan knows I will do whatever is required to uphold the honor of the Taiyo, the former demon prince said easily. At the moment, nothing is required of me, so I am free to pursue my own agendas.
Which is lurking on bridges and challenging strong warriors to duels, the ronin said.
Which will now include escorting Lady Yumeko and her companions to the capital, the noble corrected. Yumeko-san? He smiled at the girl and gestured to the distant lights over the river. I would suggest spending the night in Sagimura. The inn there is simple but agreeable, and the staff are very attentive. I have always found it a pleasant stay when I leave the capital to go on my pilgrimages.
Pilgrimages? The ronin snorted. Is that what you call them, then?
No reply from the noble. Even I had to admit, the former demon prince had excellent selective hearing.
Shall we go, then, Lady Yumeko? He asked the girl. If we hurry, we may yet reach the inn before dinner is served.
Yumeko returned his smile, and for just a moment, something inside me bristled.
That sounds wonderful, she said, instantly perking at the mention of food. Thank you, Taiyo-sama. Please, Yumeko-san, the samurai held up a hand. Taiyo-sama is my father. The four of us just fought and killed a giant centipede together. I believe we've earned the right to call each other by our first names. Just Daisuke, if you would.
Daisuke-san? Yumeko repeated, still smiling.
Thank you.
Well,
Taiyo Daisuke stepped back, gazing across the river.
I believe this is the very first time someone met Oni no Mikoto on a bridge and crossed to the other side.
His gaze fell to the Oni mask, still held loosely in one hand, and he smiled a bit sadly.
I suppose I won't need this anymore, he murmured. Whatever the outcome, whether it ends in victory or defeat, I have a feeling that Oni no Mikoto's next duel will be his final one. So.
Drawing his arm back, he hurled the mask into the air. It arched up, spinning red and white, before dropping lazily into the river. For a moment, it floated on the surface of the water, a small, pale oval against the black. Then the snarling Oni face disappeared as the current pulled it under, and it was lost from view.
26. The Capital. My eyes hurt from staring. Kin Hagen Toshi, the city of the Golden Plain, could be seen long before we even reached its impressive gates. Built on the juncture where two rivers, the Hotaru and the Kin no Kawa, the River of Gold, met, it spread for miles in every direction. The tightly packed inner city was surrounded by river and protected by steep stone walls, but the urban sprawl had crossed the natural moats and continued to creep across the plains. I had never seen so many buildings in my life. From afar, it looked like a ragged blanket of roofs, walls, bridges, and roads had been spread over the entire valley. Near the very center, rising from a vertical hill and surrounded by sheer stone ramparts, a magnificent castle soared into the air, towering over the city. Though its bottom walls were white and trimmed in dark wood, its roofs and top floors had been covered in what seemed to be pure gold, for they gleamed brilliantly against the cloudless sky, almost too bright to look at. Behold, The Palace of the Sun, Daisuke told me, sounding almost as proud as if he'd designed the castle himself. Home of the Emperor and the heart of Iwagoto.
I've never seen anything like it, I admitted, shading my eyes against the glare. Is it really made of gold?
Gold leaf, my lady, Daisuke replied. The walls and roof are gilded with it. Sadly, we've yet to figure out a feasible way to build a castle of pure gold. Though Emperor Taiyo no Ryosei did try, until the peasants revolted.
It seemed they weren't satisfied with starving to death while their emperor built himself a palace made of gold,
Okame added behind us.
Ungrateful wretches.
Daisuke ignored him. He had changed outfits since the night at the bridge and was now wearing a pair of dove-gray hakama trousers and a sky-blue haori jacket with silver clouds curled along the hems and billowy sleeves. The crest of the Taiyo, a blazing sun within a circle, was etched onto each shoulder. In the light of day, with his double swords thrust through his obi and his long white hair tied behind him, he looked every inch the noble warrior. Very unlike Okame, leaning against a tree at our backs, the end of a reed poking from between his lips. Or Tatsumi, standing to the side, a shadow that nearly blended into the shade cast from the branches. I could feel both of them watching us, one cold and alert, one mockingly amused, and wondered if either of them had felt anything close to amazement before. When it was built, Daisuke went on, unaware of the intense scrutiny at our backs. The emperor at the time, Taiyo no Kintaro, demanded a castle that would shine brighter than sun itself, so that everyone would see our family's influence for miles around. Since its construction, it's been burned to ashes no less than 4 times, but has always been restored to its former glory. A Taiyo has ruled from that palace for over 700 years.
It's beautiful, I said, squinting as one of the roof tiles caught the sun and flashed a searing white against my eyelids. Though, I am curious, does everyone living around the castle go blind on very bright days?
He chuckled. You learn not to look directly at it in the summer. We followed the road, which soon merged onto a wide thoroughfare with crowds of people traveling to and from the capital. As we crossed the bridge and walked beneath the wide, sweeping gates, my heart beat faster in excitement. Everything here was so grand, so large and noisy and fast-paced. I felt very small as we walked past dozens of shops and market stalls, unable to stop myself from looking at everything. There was a sharp tug on my sleeve, and Tatsumi pulled me to the side of the road, just as a man jogged by pulling a 2-wheeled cart. He shouted something that might have been an apology or a curse, and continued down the street without breaking stride.
Oi, was that really necessary? I called after him, then turned to Tatsumi, who raised a brow.
Gomen, I apologized. I suppose I should pay attention to what's going on around me.
That is probably prudent.
Oh, lighten up, Kage-san,
Okame broke in, striding up beside us.
She's never been to the capital. Of course she's going to be distracted. So, Yumeko-chan.
He grinned at me.
We have officially arrived in the capital. Is there any place you want to see? Anywhere you'd like to go? I can point out the more interesting spots if you want to play tourist for a bit. Or we could always wait until the sun goes down. Kinhagen Toshi really gets interesting after dark.
Does it? How so?
We're not here to sightsee. Tatsumi's voice was flat. We can't wander the city without a plan. We have a mission to complete. Besides, he said, turning to the Ronin, you said you had business in the capital. Shouldn't you be leaving?
Okame shrugged.
I have nothing important to do,
he said casually, waving it off.
I can be boring and responsible and start looking for a job any time. It's not like there aren't always merchants that need guards or gambling halls that need bouncers. And it's been so interesting traveling with the two of you, I think I'll hang around a bit longer. Why, Kage-san?
His grin turned wolfish, even as Tatsumi's eyes narrowed.
You're not trying to get rid of me, are you?
Yumeko-san. Fortunately, Daisuke stepped in before Tatsumi could make good on the "I'm going to kill you" look on his face. This mission of yours, where must we go to complete it? I've lived in this city my whole life. I know where almost everything is. If you can trust me with your mission, I can probably show you the way.
Yes. I need to find the Hayate Shrine, I told him, remembering Master Isao's final instructions. It is urgent that I speak to the High Priest there. He has information that will point me in the direction I must go.
The Hayate Shrine, Daisuke repeated slowly and nodded. Yes, I know where it's located, but it's clear across the city in the Wind District. It will take us the rest of the evening to walk there. Kinhagen Toshi is quite large, after all.
That's all right, I said. I need to find it. It's important Tatsumi and I get there as soon as possible. Would you show us the way, Daisuke-san?
He smiled. Of course.
Kinhagen Toshi continued to be amazing as we followed Taiyo-san through the sometimes straight, sometimes winding roads. Buildings rose around us, tea houses and temples, bathhouses and shrines, inns that were elegant in their simplicity, and lavish estates of the wealthy and affluent. Shops and merchant stalls lined the streets, selling everything from straw sandals and parasols to exotic spices and trinkets from across the scorched sea. Daisuke commented on the places and buildings we passed, pointing out special features, explaining a bit of the history if it was a temple, shrine, or other place of importance. He was indeed quite knowledgeable about his city, and I found myself listening to the noble in rapt fascination. Once, Okame remarked that we could probably take a shortcut through a place called the Red Light District, and then he could tell me all about the area. But before I could ask what he meant, Daisuke turned and gave him such a withering look, that offer was quickly rescinded. Tatsumi, as usual, stayed farther back, as soundless as a trailing shadow, making no attempt at conversation. As we turned down a narrow street with a canal on one side and a wall on the other, I dropped back to walk alongside him. He eyed me, not entirely suspicious, but expectant. "Isn't this incredible, Tatsumi?" I murmured, watching a kingfisher dart up from the canal in a streak of bright blue. "I never knew there were places like this in the world." Master Isao didn't talk much about the lands outside the temple, I went on. I think he and the others were afraid the outside world would lure me away. If I'd known there were places like this just beyond the temple walls, he might have been right. Tatsumi didn't answer, and I frowned at him. You're being very quiet, Tatsumi-san.
I'm always quiet.
Yes, but you've been even broodier than normal lately, I persisted. Is something wrong? Did you step on something sharp?
We should be concentrating on the mission, he replied, a bit shortly. Not playing tourist with nobles or visiting gambling halls and red light districts with Ronin. This isn't a pleasure trip.
I know that. Glancing at the noble, walking a little ahead and talking with Okame, I lowered my voice. But Daisuke-san is taking us to the Hayate Shrine. It would be rude to go off without him. He looked away.
We don't need them. They'll only get in the way and slow us down. Once we figure out where the temple is, we should leave them behind.
He's helping us, Tatsumi. Okame helped us too in the Gaki village. We can't just leave them. Besides, what about your duel with Daisuke-san?
He eyed me. Are you saying you want to see one of us die?
He asked in a strangely brittle voice.
Or do you not want me around at all? Perhaps you would prefer the Ronin and noble to escort you to the temple.
Of course not. I frowned at his strange, sudden hostility. That's not what I'm saying, Tatsumi-san.
No.
His voice dropped, becoming nearly inaudible.
Maybe it should be.
Oi, you too!
Okame called from up ahead.
Whatever you're whispering about back there, can it wait? Our guide says the shrine is across the road.
I hurried past a pair of boys with fishing rods to join Daisuke and the Ronin at the edge of the street. Directly across the road, a red torii gate stood before a stone staircase that went straight up the forested hill. This is the entrance to the Hayate Shrine, Daisuke said, gazing up the steep staircase, looking undaunted by the thought of climbing it. Though it is rather late to be calling on the priest, he added, glancing at the sky through the branches. The sun had set a few minutes ago, and the first of the stars were coming out.
Is he expecting you, Yumeko-san?
Not that I know of, I replied, feeling Tatsumi stop beside me. But I need to talk to him soon. Tonight, if I can.
All right.
Okame sighed, giving the staircase a resigned look.
Priest first, then gambling hall later, and maybe some red light district fun afterward. It's gonna be a busy night. I hope you two can keep up.
He specifically looked at Daisuke as he said this, as if gauging the other's response. The noble, for his part, ignored him and raised a hand toward the steps. This is your mission, Yumeko-san. We follow you. I took a deep breath, relieved and nervous all at once. I was almost there, just a few more steps until I completed the first part of my mission. Finding Master Jiro, who could tell me where to find the Steel Feather Temple. My journey wasn't over, we still had to get to the temple and I had no idea where it was, but I imagined we would have to cross several unfamiliar territories and search the harshest, most unforgiving terrain, all the while being pursued by blood mages and demons. I would still have to keep the scroll safe from demons and my own companions. From a dangerous, single-minded demon slayer who might kill me if he realized I had tricked him, that I'd possessed the scroll all along. This wasn't the end, far from it. This was another beginning, and for a moment, my head spun at what I still had to do.
One step at a time, little fox.
I remembered Master Isao's voice, his words whenever I faced a mountain of chores or an especially daunting task.
The spider does not spin its web in a heartbeat, nor does the albatross fly across oceans with a few flaps of its wings. Many would consider what they do impossible, and yet they still complete their tasks without fail, because they simply start.
One step at a time. I took one step, then another, until I had crossed the road and stood before the torii gate. Beyond the arch was sacred ground, the realm of the kami. I offered a respectful bow to the spirits whose territory I was entering and started up the steps. It was a fairly steep, long stairway, and I was careful to keep to one side of the steps, as the center of the path was reserved for the kami. The edge of the staircase was quite worn, rough with age and time, making it important to watch where you put your feet. As I climbed the last step, I spotted a Komainu statue, the maned lion dogs that protected the shrine from evil spirits, atop its plinth flanking the staircase, mouth open in a fearsome snarl. Another stone pedestal sat on the other side of the steps, but this one was empty, as if the second guardian had decided to abandon its post. Briefly, I wondered what had happened to it. Komainu guardians always came in pairs. But the thought was quickly forgotten as I passed beneath a second torii and saw the small but elegant shrine across the tiny courtyard.
The Haiden, or prayer hall, sitting on a raised platform atop a flight of 4 stone steps, was the vermilion red of the Torii Gate. A sacred rope was draped across the entrance, indicating the holiness of the building. Beyond the Haiden was the Honden, the main building where the kami were housed, and no one but the priest and resident shrine maidens were allowed to enter.
"Looks like no one's here,"
Okame mused. There were no people near or around the Haiden. The courtyard was empty, as was the purification fountain near the entrance. But in a place like this, where the only sound was the wind in the pines and the trickle of water into the fountain, the presence of the kami could be felt everywhere. Even the brash, irreverent Ronin seemed loath to break the stillness.
"Maybe we should check the outbuildings? The priest quarters should be around somewhere, right?"
Daisuke gazed across the courtyard toward the Haiden, a thoughtful frown on his face.
"Before we do anything else, we should first pay our respects to the kami," he stated in a solemn voice. "We are guests here, and I have no desire to invite bad fortune into my house by offending them."
"I guess you're right," Okame said, "though I can usually offend by simply existing. It's a talent, I suppose."
In preparation to speak to the kami, we gathered around the purification fountain, a stone trough with ladles balanced around the edges. Daisuke dipped one of the long wooden ladles in the water and poured some over his left hand, then his right, before swiping a finger over his lips and carefully replacing the ladle. I followed his example, noting that Okame did the same, though his expression was slightly sour as he dumped the extremely cold water over his hands, rinsed his mouth, and spit into the bushes. Even Tatsumi followed the ritual, carefully cleansing his hands and touching water to his lips in a very calm, practical manner. Thus cleansed, we turned and made our way to the Haiden at the top of the steps. It was an elegant structure with a green-tiled roof that curved up the corners and bright red pillars beneath. A wooden offering box sat before a lattice screen that covered the window into the building. Fascinated, I watched as Daisuke dropped a silver tora into the box, then shook the rope dangling to the side. A chime rang out from a large bell overhead, and immediately I felt an awakening all around us, as if dozens of eyes suddenly turned our way. The kami of the shrine were aware of our presence now. I hoped they would not take offense to a presumptuous half-kitsune invading their territory. Seeming unaware of the sudden attention, Daisuke bowed once and then a second time. Bringing his hands before his face, he clapped twice, slow and deliberate, then closed his eyes in silent prayer. When he was finished, Okame repeated the ritual, tossing a copper keiru into the offering box, ringing the bell and clapping twice before closing his eyes to pray. Trying to be patient and wait for my turn, I noticed Tatsumi still standing at the bottom of the steps. His arms were crossed, and he was gazing at the Torii Gate across the yard. He looked tense, his jaw set and eyes hard, as if he wasn't comfortable here. I walked down to stand beside him. "Are you all right, Tatsumi-san? You look a little pale."
"I'm fine."
"Are you going to make a wish to the kami? Maybe pray for our mission to go well?" He shook his head.
"The kami wouldn't listen to someone like me."
"Why?"
"Because calling on the gods requires purity of heart as well as body,"
Tatsumi replied. His gaze shifted to his open palm, and a shadow went through his eyes.
"Even if I cleansed myself 1,000 times, my soul is tainted beyond forgiveness. The kami want nothing to do with me."
"Oh." I thought about that a moment. It sounded so sad, to be ignored by the gods. "Tell me then," I offered. He blinked and looked at me, seeming confused. I met his gaze and smiled. "Your wish, Tatsumi. If you could pray for anything right now, what would it be? I'll ask the kami for you."
Yumeko.
His eyes softened. For a heartbeat, I could see past the cold and shadows and blank mirror gaze, and the vulnerability there made my stomach clench.
Excuse me.